We will call the Property Tax Relief and Local Sales Tax Division Committee to order and welcome everyone. And we do have a quorum. At this time, I would like to... At this time, we would like to move House File 3 for approval and to be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. And also, we would like to, at this time, adopt the DE1 amendment. So I will move adoption of the DE1 amendment to get things into its proper form. Is there any discussion or debate on the DE1 amendment?
Okay.
If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the DE1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. At this time, I would like to offer some time to the various groups who would like to testify. And I know Mayor Ness from Alexandria has some time constraints. And we'll call on you first, Mayor. And what we will do is try to hold your comments to about 2 minutes. We'll kind of give you a little warning when you hit the two-minute mark. And from there, so welcome. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I am Dan Ness, Mayor of the City of Alexandria. I also function as the President of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We have 69 member cities making up the coalition. And the coalition supports many, many aspects of this bill. We have one little disappointment in that the funding to restore to the 2003 level we felt would require about $100 million, but nevertheless, we support many, many of the aspects. We like the comprehensive nature of the bill. The school aid, the county aid, the township aid, and LGA are all affected by it. The LGA portion itself, we're pleased that the removal of the tax and aid offset, there is a need inflation factor that's involved, and also increasing the maximum cap. So we're quite pleased with that. We think that increasing the LGA appropriation by inflation, we have some incentive to work together to try to accomplish that as well. And we do look forward to that. We have another slight disappointment in that the regional aid has not been a part of the upgrade, still using the 2000 census instead of the current state demographer's estimate. There are several cities, Alexandria being one, that is very adversely affected by that. We went over 10,000 mark in 2003. We function and serve about 25 to 30,000 in our retail area, which is supported by the sales tax from retail sales in our area. And we'll keep harping on that one over the years. But generally speaking, we look forward to working with the legislature, this committee, and all the other organizations representing cities that we can really strengthen and improve the LGA program. And thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Steve Peterson from Clarendon, here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota. I just have one quick comment I want to add regarding the, I'll call it the play nice provision in the bill about the city organizations getting together and fixing the formula. There's just a small thing with that is that when we start talking about comprehensive changes and we're talking about a difference of 1% versus an inflationary increase, it does just make it a little harder for city groups to get together and try to figure out what way to make it work. I mean, we're not against it by any stretch. I'm just wanting to put that on record.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next on the list, I have Keith Carlson. Is Keith? We will come back. Mr. Jamboy?
Thank you very much.
Good morning,
Chair and members. Good morning. My name is Louis Jamboy. I'm with the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, Metro Cities, That's 86 members in the Twin Cities metro area, and we very much appreciate the opportunity to respond to House File Number 3. First, we applaud the comprehensive and creative nature of the bill. It was quite a piece of work. It took a lot of effort, and it's very well done, we think. In the 2 days since rollout, though, we haven't had a whole lot of time to do a real serious analysis, so our comments are going to be pretty preliminary. On Article 1, the Homestead Credit Refund for homeowners and renters, Metro Cities has long been an advocate for MVHC to be paid directly to homeowners, and we've been the supporter of PTR. We think House File 3 creates a creative and appropriate nexus between rising property taxes and income. We think it's good policy, and we think you're going in the right direction. The trick, as always with this approach, is going to be to make sure the money gets to the individuals that need it, to the people that qualify. That's always been a challenge for the PTR. We don't think it's insurmountable, but it's always a challenge. On Article 3, aids to local governments, we appreciate the increase in LGA dollars and the proposed adjustments for small city aid, inflation, taconite offset, and volatility. Those are all good things to do. We've been supportive of those throughout this process. But we also have some concerns. The LGA approach doesn't recognize the need for additional resources in the inner ring and the older metro area cities. That's something that we've been talking about since the session began. And it doesn't recognize that consensus reform is going to be very difficult to do if it's not conducted in conjunction with increasing the amount of aid to avoid creating winners and losers. We are afraid that creating winners and losers in the LGA program will inevitably result in angst and conflict and make the job of reaching consensus more difficult. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't support growth in the LGA pot now. It means that our job of reaching consensus, even with the carrot that the committee is offering, will be harder to do in the future. On property taxes, Metro Cities has supported the reinstatement of this old house, and we're very pleased to see that provision is back in this bill. We think it's a very valuable tool, especially when used in conjunction with other programs and tools to keep older homes, older neighborhoods, and older cities vital. So we think it's wonderful policy. We appreciate you moving in that direction. We're concerned about the supplemental notice of proposed increases. That proposal, we think it looks expensive and potentially confusing for taxpayers. We know our concerns are shared by many other local government groups, and we want to work with you on that here in the coming days. We are similarly concerned about the monthly payment option. You've heard from several local government groups that could have serious financial implications. We're one of those groups that's concerned as well. Metro Cities has long supported the continuation of fiscal disparities until such time that appropriate replacement mechanisms have been developed. Therefore, we support this analysis. As a recovering bureaucrat, though, I have to question how a quality job on that very complex program could be done for $50,000. I recognize that you could have mandated the study with no money at all, but it's a big, big issue, a very complex deal, and it needs it's going to take real effort on the part of whoever does that work, and it's going to cost more than $50,000 to do a quality job. On local sales tax, as we've stated, you have slammed the door and bolted it on any local sales tax. And our only question there is the Transportation Committee has included a metro-wide sales tax for roads and transit. And we are wondering if this bill creates a conflict with that approach. And we want to work with you and other members as we proceed on both this course and the transportation course. And with that, Mr. Chair, I think my 2 minutes is well up. I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I see Mr. Carlson in the room. Mr. Carlson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I momentarily stepped out of the room. Mr. Chairman, members, I do have a hand that's been distributed, and I would like to start off by saying that we support the bill's focus on homeowners. This class of properties have suffered among the highest property tax increases since 2001, so we fully endorse the bill's focus on providing relief to that class of properties. We want to let the committee know we are very concerned with the what we believe is the underfunding of the county program aid vis-a-vis what is provided for cities and LGA. The bill currently provides $15 million of county program aid versus $60 million for the city's local government aid program. Yet our levy is over $500 million greater than the city's, and we strongly question that allocation given that we are actually the larger entity in terms of our levy and our expenditures. Further, under the current aid program, we approximately get about 42 cents for every dollar received by cities, yet this bill provides us just 25 cents for every dollar received by cities, further compounding that inequity. I just want to point out, to add to our argument, significant concerns we have in the Health and Human Services Committee relating to permanent funding for child protection has not been addressed, and that's an extraordinarily large issue for counties. Finally, in this category, there's another issue as to the indexing of the appropriation for county program aid versus city LGA in the future. City LGA, once an agreement is reached on the formula, will receive a minimum of a 2.5% increase per year and up to a 5% increase depending on the rate of inflation, whereas cities or counties only receive 1%. We strongly urge you to provide some fairness and equity and give us the same level of indexing. Going on then, we do support the class rate changes for utilities. As the graph on the first page showed, utilities have enjoyed a 20% reduction in their property taxes between 2001 and 2006. As the committee knows, new valuation rules being proposed by the Department of Revenue will further reduce their taxes. The bill's class rate changes will reduce the latter decreases, prevent drastic tax increases and shifts onto other properties in the host communities, and minimize increased state aid outlays for those communities. Repeating what you're going to hear, I think, repeatedly, we're concerned with the 1/8 monthly payment scheme for homeowners. First, it's just simply unnecessary. There's nothing preventing a homeowner from doing exactly that right now, as long as they pay 50% of their tax by the first half due date of May 15th and 50% or the remainder by the second half due date of October 15th. They can do 1/5 monthly payments from January through May and then 1/5 monthly payments from June through October, and basically have the same effect. Further, they can also do their own savings plans that have the same effect, or if they elect to pay by credit card, they can also have the same effect. This is simply a non-issue for the 50% of the homeowners in the state who escrow with their mortgage companies. It will, as has been repeatedly stated to the committee, harm the cash flow of every local government, and what is yet to be acknowledged in any fiscal analysis I've seen is that it will require an increase in state expenditures on a one-time basis for school aids due to the requirements of the current school aid metering requirements. I don't think you should be spending money to do that when the emphasis it is on fighting property tax relief, not paying for.
Mr. Carlson, could you finish up in about 30 seconds, or finally 2 or 3 minutes for?
Mr. Chairman, members, we do oppose the supplemental notice of the property tax levy increase. We already have the truth in taxation notice that goes out to every taxpayer, This additional notice could cost counties up to $1 million in postage alone, and cities would possibly be close to the same. It's not necessary to address what seems to be the concern over a 2002 phenomenon, where because taxes in that year dropped, some local governments may have used it as an opportunity to increase taxes. As far as the property tax payment that taxpayers are going to be received, they're going to see their taxes going up, particularly homeowners over the years 2009, 2010, and 2011 has their homestead credit that they receive on their statement phases out. So we just simply see no necessity for it. Furthermore, since you're already providing for a study of the truth in taxation study, we think you should wait until that study is concluded before providing further changes.
Mr. Carlson, it's been about 4 or 5 minutes.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. I'll be happy to conclude it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yes, Representative Loeffler.
While we're waiting for the next testifier to come up, maybe you should announce who that is. I just thought I'd clarify that your author's amendment did address the inflation issue that was raised earlier in Mr. Carlson's testimony.
Thank you very much, Representative Loeffler. And also, on the spreadsheet, we have $150,000 for the fiscal disparity study because we would figure we need consultants, so we actually are covering the bases there with a little extra money for that study. So thanks for bringing that up. Mr. Donahue from City Manager, New Hope.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dan Donahue. I am the City Manager for the City of New Hope. I'm here today on behalf of the North Metro Mayors Association. Like AMM, we have not had time to conduct a detailed review of what is a very extensive and impressive property tax proposal. Based upon our preliminary review, North Metro Mayors would like to offer the following comments. First, we strongly support the centerpiece of this legislation, that is giving property tax relief through targeted and enhanced direct payments to individual homeowners. This is accomplished by combining two current programs into a single new homestead credit state refund program at a significantly higher funding level. The demise of the homestead market value credit program in particular is to be applauded. This is a program which few knew even existed, and most of those who are aware of the program do not understand it, how it works, and why it was created. The new homestead credit state refund program directly establishes a strong link between property taxes and the ability to pay. Anna Boy's confusion. It is truly artful in its simplicity. My second comment is related to the LGA program specifically. The North Metro Mayors Association has been working closely with a number of other cities in the metropolitan area to see how the LGA program could better serve the needs of the metro cities. This includes cities such as Brooklyn Park and Blaine. They receive no LGA even though they have needs and are below the average in tax capacity. We developed a proposal which did recognize these needs with targeted LGA and which can be tailored to fit any size increase in the appropriation. We are disappointed that with an appropriation increase of over 12%, the needs of more metropolitan cities were not recognized. However, we look forward to working with you, Mr. Chairman, and all parties as this legislation proceeds to address these concerns. Again, we support and applaud the centerpiece of this legislation, the creation of the Homestead Credit State Refund Program at a strong funding level. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your proposal and giving us the time to comment.
Mr. Donahue, thank you so much for those comments. We have Ms. Wright from Northern Natural Gas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joanne Wright. I am the property tax manager for Northern Natural Gas Company, headquartered in Omaha, Nebraska. I am once again appearing here in opposition to this bill raising the class rates on utilities. Northern is a strong economic partner here in the state of Minnesota. We're in the midst of a $250 million capital expansion over the next couple years here. We employ over 100 employees here. We pay almost $7 million a year in personal property and real estate tax in the state. We deliver gas from our field area to our market area up here in the Twin Cities area. Over 45% of our peak day capacity is delivered here to customers in Minnesota. That's residences, hospitals. We serve 13 of the 16 ethanol plants here in the state. We feel this bill puts an unfair burden on interstate pipelines. The Department of Revenue's own study confirms that we will not see a valuation decrease. Pipelines as an industry will increase in valuation under the new methodology. Our own internal study supports this. I was a member of the advisory committee with the Department of Revenue representing the interstate gas pipeline industry, and I confirmed with all of the other pipelines that I represented that we will see an increase in valuation. We view this as almost a piling on with the reinstitution of the sales tax on compressor fuel. That added an additional $1.2 million Northern has paid since August of 2005 when that sales tax was reinstituted. And we also lost the capital equipment exemption for our new capital investment here in the state of Minnesota. So under our thinking, this is not making up for any loss in valuation. In fact, it's an increase in taxes for our company, and we view it as unfair. And once again, we want to mention that the phase-in of the methodology change allows for a three-year phase-in of the new methodology, but this bill would take effect immediately. I can answer any questions. I can try to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wright. Mr. Reinberger from Xcel Energy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Joe Reinberger, and I'm with Xcel Energy's Tax Department. Thank you for giving me time on your agenda today. I'm here to speak in opposition to Section 15 on page 52 of the DE1 amendment. That's the utility class rate increase. Section 15 increases property tax rates in order to continue a revenue stream that was based on inaccurate valuations. This seems to us to be inconsistent with the state's tax policy goals of uniformity, equity, and transparency. It reverses the past 14 years of state tax policy decisions to not expand the personal property tax, which was phased out for other industries in the 1970s. We are invested in our communities, and we want to pay our fair share of taxes. However, cities and counties with utility property do receive extra compensation. It's the personal property tax, which utilities pay in addition to the tax on their real property. For instance, in 2006, Xcel paid $30 million statewide in real property taxes, land and buildings, and it paid an additional $80 million for personal property in the communities that are seeking this rate increase. This bill also sends utility customer revenues to communities whose tax bases are growing. Capital investment at our plants alone in the next few years will add $270 million to the tax base in Monticello, $630 million to the tax base in Red Wing, and $325 million to the tax base in Becker. We have been working with our communities to mitigate the effect of the valuation correction. We opted to correct it through a participatory rulemaking process rather than challenging our assessments annually in tax court. We supported the three-year phase-in of the corrected valuation rule. We support the transition aid in the governor's budget. We offered to keep our mostly significant affected communities whole for 10 years in the form of revenue stabilization agreements. However, we believe it is reasonable to ask that our property be accurately assessed by the state, and we oppose increasing property taxes in order to continue a revenue stream that was based on inaccurate valuations. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, is this the proper time? I'd like to ask a question or two about this personal property tax, not from him, but from council.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is this flow in the same direction that regular property taxes do? I mean, does it get distributed, county, cities, and so forth? Is there any difference except we've got a different name and the way it's distributed? I guess that's the question.
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, the only difference I would point out is that the electric generation equipment does not pay the state tax, but all the local taxes, it flows the same way exactly, yes.
Okay, what...
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, what's the net effect of what we're talking about here? I somehow missed this whole section while we've been talking about it.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, the net effect approximately would bring the tax capacity of this property back to where it was before the new utility rules are in. So where it is right now before the utility rules caused the value to go down, and on a statewide average basis at least, these class rates are designed to bring that to be back to the same amount of tax capacity that property is right now. It's not necessarily true from jurisdiction to jurisdiction or by specific type of utility property, but that's the overall idea.
Well, Mr. Chairman, will the utilities be paying the same amount no matter what it's called, personal property or property tax? I mean, personal, whatever it's called, the money will be the same we'll be paying after this change as before.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Earhart, probably they would be roughly the same. As I said, there's these jurisdictional differences that may cause it to be somewhat different. And I should point out, too, that the class rates put them back into as if the full utility value was phased in immediately. For instance, in pay 2008, only 20% of the new utility rules are in effect, the reduction. But this class rate would sort of push them back. So actually, for the first 2 years, for 2008 and 2009, they would have a higher tax capacity than they do now. But by 2010, pay 2010, when the utility rule was fully in place, these class rates would then sort of bring them to where they are now. And in general, they would pay about the same amount of tax they are now, notwithstanding whatever new... the testifier talked about new facilities coming online, et cetera, but just on looking at the current stock of their property value.
So, Mr. Chairman, in effect, they have been taxed too much, and now they're having that reduced, and this legislation will put them back to what they were being taxed too much at that rate? Is that what we're looking at?
It would bring them back, as they said, to where they were.
Mr. Chairman, then why were they given a reduction in the first place? For some reasons of sanity, I would assume, and now we're going to push them back again to where they were not supposed to be in the first place. Am I missing that here, or what?
Anything want to go through the history of what happened here, or the speaker?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to add one thing and to expand a little bit on that. The rules that the administrative law judge, when the department went through them and when they were approved the phase-in, the 20% the first year, 50% the third, and 50% the second and 30% the third. So that value, the rules are going to be phased in 3 years, but so that reduction would have occurred over that 3 year period. But the class rates that are in the bill are going to occur all at once on the value. So there is going to be an increase for 2 years, and then it would kind of be back, I think, to where it would have been, right? Maybe Mr. Reinberger wants, but I think for 2 years there's a mismatch because the rules have to be done with the 20, 50, 100, I think.
And Mr. Reinberger.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Baker, members of the committee, we've actually run the calculations, and not only do the provisions wipe out the correction of the valuation that the department has made in its valuation rule. It actually adds to our tax bill from what we're currently paying right now.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is an increase in the amount that the utilities, the ratepayers, will be paying over what they're paying now, if I just heard that testimony correctly.
Representative Earhart, that whether or not it will result in ratepayers' increase is certainly up to the company. But what this does by upping the rates here is to try to keep the cities and counties that would have a lower tax base whole. That's the intent of it. Now, there's different ways in which we could go about that. We could provide state aid to offset the city's loss, which is going to cost the state money, or this approach, which basically kind of brings it back to hold these cities and counties whole. So that's certainly the debate there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I read it through a little bit here, and it sounded to me like that was an error on the part of the valuation experts to begin with. They're admitting that they made an error and that they were overcharging the utilities for a number of years. I don't know how many years, but for quite some time. And so we're not really... This goes back, Mr. Chairman, to a question I've been asking a number of times. How many times are we going to hit the ratepayers with what is scattered through the legislation that's coming through? This is just another one. This is a direct one. But all the conservation issues and all this sort of thing, nobody's keeping a tab on that. We're just going to wake up one day and our electric bill is going to be an extra $100 a month or something like that. There's nothing bothering. But this one particularly sounds to me like we're taking direct shot at them.
Representative, it's still questionable whether or not ratepayers would pay anything extra, but it would come down to who's going to pay extra, assuming ratepayers would. Ratepayers are property owners. So, I mean, there's someone's going to pay for this drop in valuation. And the approach here is to protect the property owner and trying to make these cities and counties whole.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, you mentioned the increase in the rates to the ratepayers. Indeed, whatever increased property taxes we would incur would be a component of the next rate case. You bet.
Thank you very much. We now have Mr. Menke from Alliance Pipeline.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Troy Meinke, and I serve as a team leader for Environment for Alliance Pipeline, and I've been asked to speak to you today on behalf of this bill. Alliance Pipeline is a new interstate natural gas pipeline that began service on December 1st, 2000. Our system covers a lot of ground running from western Canada to Midwest markets, delivering natural gas from our secure trading partner to the north. We have two compressor stations in Minnesota, one near Bird Island in Renville County, and one near Albert Lea in Freeborn County. As an interstate pipeline, our business is regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, as defined in the Natural Gas Act. During our startup, Alliance established its U.S. headquarters in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. We've created 29 well-paying jobs in Minnesota and are dedicated to transporting much-needed natural gas safely and reliably to U.S. Midwest markets. I'm here today to testify on this bill, a bill which will increase property taxes on Alliance Pipeline's assets in Minnesota. As a new pipeline recently constructed, Alliance takes its responsibilities as a corporate citizen very seriously, but we have two significant concerns with regard to this bill. Reiterating what you've heard from other utilities, as proposed in this bill, Alliance will see an increase in its property tax burden of about $1 million per year. This increase is on top of the $1.4 million increase that we received as a result of the compressor fuel tax that was enacted in 2005. In 2006, Alliance paid over $9 million in property taxes to 13 counties where our pipeline is located. This money, which was given to the counties, was not expected during construction of our facilities, and therefore it was realized as just an added benefit to the counties, not as an expectation. Our second concern is that this potential bill will serve to be a detriment to Alliance Pipeline's future efforts to recontract or to expand our service offerings in Minnesota. Specifically, increased property taxes in Minnesota will factor into ours and other companies' decisions to build additional natural gas transmission infrastructure in our state. As you might know, there are ongoing efforts to develop the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline, and this would bring natural gas from Alaska to markets in the lower 48. Alliance Pipeline is actively working to be one of the preferred routes for this pipeline. Raising pipeline state property taxes can and will be seen as a negative as future projects are developed. I can categorically state that another pipeline currently under development has specifically chosen to route around Minnesota due in part to property tax uncertainty in the state. This pipeline has chosen to route through South Dakota and Nebraska and North Dakota instead of Minnesota. I am very concerned that increasing pipeline property taxes will place Alliance in an uncompetitive situation as we begin to renegotiate our contracts for the 2015 timeframe and look at future infrastructure development. As a result of these concerns, Alliance Pipeline opposes this bill. Mr. Chairman, I thank the committee for the opportunity to testify today and be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Mankey, do you know of the total percent of your expenditures, what percent goes into paying property taxes?
Not off the top of my head, but I certainly could provide that information to you at a later date if you'd like that.
It would be interesting to note that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, we have five more people who were on the list initially and a few that have been added. We're going to take the five that are on the list initially. You will have 1 to 2 minutes because we have at least 4 or 5 amendments we are going to take up. So those who have been added, and I've actually added a couple that were not on the list additionally, but now there's more coming. So those will have to wait till we're all done with amendments unless it's something specific to an amendment. So we have Mr. Carlson, Gary Carlson, and Mr. Matthews there, and if you could... Please, I'm going to hit the gavel at 2 minutes now on everyone at this point.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Gary Carlson with the League of Cities. I'll be faster than that. I've testified on most of the provisions in the bill. On hold, Mr. Chair, I applaud you for the bill. We do support the restoration of LGA and the changes made to LGA, with the one exception that the bill does not include the fix for the regional center population adjustment. We would like to see that in the bill. We do also support the TNT cost and participation study that Representative Hawes brought forward, and the This Old House provisions in the bill. Very briefly, some of our concerns, the property tax notice does create some problems, as Mr. Keith Carlson alluded to. We would support a removal of that from the bill. We do have concerns about the monthly payment structure, as has been alluded to by many of the other testifiers. We do, I think nobody's testified on this yet, we do oppose the sales tax prohibition that is stated in the last section of the bill. And Mr. Chair, with that, I've been less than 60 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Matthews.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with AMC, and I'm actually going to have our President Bob Benrick from Cook County provide our testimony.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and members. I am Bob Benrick, Cook County Commissioner, and this year's President of the Association of Minnesota Counties. Like those before me, we commend you for the addition of the $15 million provided to the county for program aid. Notwithstanding the comments of Mr. Carlson, we surely appreciate that. We are down here as a group with the League of Cities and the schools having joint convention this week. But we recognize that counties are unique local governments, and in fact that we are asked to administer a number of state programs and county program aid dollars, our way for the state to ease the burden of these many unfunded and underfunded mandates. AMC strongly supports the proposed TNT study, the language allowing local governments to hold joint TNT hearings in the new classification of rural vacant lands. AMC strongly opposes the supplemental notice provision of this program. I'll move on quickly because in the interest of time. We would caution you on the restoration of the Old House program that this will increase the workload to county assessors. We would like to take issue with the fact that the door will be shut on the local sales tax. Knowing I am from Cook County, there are reasons that we look at this, and they are economic, and they are not frivolous in any way. AMC supports the efforts of this committee to provide citizens with immediate relief through the rebates tied to income by targeting property tax relief. But we wish to emphasize that relief is not the whole answer. AMC has long time supported a comprehensive look at the sales tax, at the property tax system. We encourage that this committee take a look at that. What should the property tax be used for? Should be the number one question. Who is responsible for providing those programs? The second question, the county or the state. And then who should be allowed to pay that proper share of that? And with that, I'll conclude, knowing in the interest of time, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Fenwick.
And Mr. Chair, just briefly also, we do oppose the monthly payment provisions for counties. It does create a cash flow issue, and we've testified to that earlier. And I did speak with Scott County this morning, and they do have a third party administering that. So if we could talk about this in the meantime, there are some private sector answers to that I think have been spoken.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matthews. Thank you. You bet. I also want to mention we have a guest today to our committee from the Tax Committee, the Republican lead, Representative Simpson. Welcome. Mr. Horner. Representative Lincheski, are you two figuring out the tax bill right now?
We're noticing patterns on what people don't like and do like.
Very good. Mr. Horner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jack Horner, representing Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. Mr. Chairman and members, we have comments on two parts. First of all, as everyone else, and we very much appreciate the property tax relief, the badly needed property tax relief. So I just want to go on record supporting that. We do urge that you approach very carefully, however, the change from the market value credit to a property tax refund. The property tax refund program that is greatly expanded starts to look in some ways like the old homestead credit of the 1970s and 80s. The old homestead credit that was triggered by simply a percentage of property taxes. And this was identified in numerous forums and commissions and property tax study groups as one of the key mechanisms that provided a tendency to increase property taxes. And through the late 80s, when we had huge double-digit inflations, this was identified and finally was dismantled and replaced in successive reforms in 1988 and 1989. And no one is saying that local taxing jurisdictions go hog wild or anything like that, but it does provide an incentive, clearly, by relieving the political pressure by essentially shielding homeowners from much of the decision of taxing decisions, and by making the commercial and apartments and other classes of property bear the full brunt, you reduce a great deal of the political pressure, and it makes it a lot easier as a tendency to raise taxes. And so taxes generally increase. It very strongly hurts rental housing and commercial and every other non-favored class. And finally, of course, it becomes ultimately very difficult to sustain because local taxing jurisdictions simply create an automatic draw in the state treasury. You can raise the taxes. It triggers huge payments, continuing annually, ever-increasing payments from the state treasury to the local governments, and at the same time, shielding homeowners from the voters from the responsibility of keeping track of what their local officials are doing. I do urge caution in approaching this approach. Secondly, Mr. Chairman, we again thank you very much for the inclusion of the 4D amendments. I've testified on this before, but just to for members who may not have heard, we do have concern about the provision that requires I'm done. We'll visit about these later. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Horner. We have Mr. Schmidt from the assessors.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I apologize for my cold, but we'll go on from there. Have a concern. I'm representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. We have a little bit of a concern in respect to this old house with dealing with exclusion of value.
Would you please state your name also?
I'm sorry, Marty Schmidt, Cohen County Assessor. It's involving with the exclusion value of the property causing a property shift with this old house. Thousands of properties are still on the old Bissell's House that haven't sunset yet. Involved in that, it does also create additional administration costs to each county. I think that was discussed before too. We do support the rural vacant land. What we feel is a good part of it. We also want to thank you for clarifying regarding the dealer modular homes as being as one of the issues that we're dealing with. All in all, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And our final testifier is Mr. Solon from the townships. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kent Solon with the Minnesota Association of Townships. a number of comments have already been made that I will not duplicate. We simply want to state our appreciation that this committee has found fit to include townships in an aid formula for the first time in several years. We do have just a couple of quick concerns to point out, and that would be the formula is currently in the bill on page 27 would amount to approximately 8.5% of the total aid that we lost in 2001. And that's without taking into account any inflation in terms of expenses and what the aid would have been had it continued on. And so we are a little concerned that there may be still, when you see local town levies have to increase for our actual expenses, that there may be fingers being pointed, well, see, there's still those township levies being upped even though we're trying to provide assistance. But the amount, while we're greatly appreciative to be at the table, we hope that we can work with the committee to increase and get it a little bit closer perhaps to what the other body is looking at. I'd also lastly just point out that on page 30, the study group that is created, while I understand the need to keep that very limited, we hope that there will at least be some consultation with the Township Association on future changes to LGA formulas, because as we've discussed in previous testimony, changes in LGA at the city level definitely has impacts on the surrounding and neighboring townships. So at that, I'll wrap up my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, anyone have any comments before we start looking at amendments? Any general comments? And, of course, after the amendments, there can be discussion on the division report, but anything before we do that?
Well,
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, what was the rationale behind stopping local option sales tax? I can't tell you that I can remember how many folks out there have them and want them and are anxious for more. Have you got a council? You have a somewhat of a ballpark figure. And
Representative Earhart, I have a couple of reasons. In the remaining half hour of this meeting, Representative Lachesky will probably swing in on this, but my concerns, and I think a number of legislators, is the fact that initially when local government aid began, local option sales taxes were prohibited with the idea that you're getting receiving the local government aid that should cover that. And Representative Lanning has asked staff, which they provided on a sheet that showed states that allow the local option sales tax to actually give out the less than local government aid, and those that kind of restrict option sales tax or prohibit them, they have the highest share of LGA per capita. So there is kind of a link there, and my fear is there will be this kind of erosion in the LGA if that occurs. The second concern I have is that it would tend to benefit regional cities at the expense of cities around them, and I think it would create more of the haves and the have-nots, especially out in rural Minnesota. So those are a couple of concerns I have, and I don't know if Representative Lachesky wants to one, any other representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll weigh in. I've been a long-time opponent of them. I think many legislators who both like them and don't have argued that it seems to be a political decision. Some people get them, some people don't. People can't figure out why. Why do certain bills pass? Why don't they? But I think the policy reason is they exacerbate disparities between wealthy and poor communities. They actually make cities with lots of net tax capacity have the ability to raise even more quicker, and those who don't cannot. And I've often said to those who argue with me about this that if we're going to have them, let's have them for everybody. And I think if we really let every city in the state of Minnesota have them, people would understand why very wealthy cities in their average net tax capacity would be the huge winners of these proposals. And now that the gloves are off in the metro, with all 44 cities in Hennepin County having one against its wishes, I mean, it's either everybody or nobody. And I think people only have to look to my city to understand why we wouldn't want to let a local option sales tax take place, and to argue that some cities should have them and other cities don't get them. It used to be contained between the metro and rural, except for Minneapolis and St. Paul. Those days are over. We've got 44 cities in the metro plus St. Paul who have them, and we either need to put an end to these and give it up, or just say everybody who wants one can have one. And you can very quickly look at what Edina could raise, or Bloomington, very quickly with a local option sales tax. And I think the days of saying this city should get it and these others shouldn't, we've passed that, and we need to either stop them all or let everybody have them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the horse is out of the barn. So how many, Ms. Dalton, how many cities do you have?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, there are 14 cities if you count Central Minnesota City Group as one city, and there are two counties.
14?
Mr. Chair, though, there's 44 cities in Hennepin County that aren't added in that. Representative Earhart and I represent them. And while they haven't been individual bills brought forward by the city of Edina to have a local option sales tax, it was imposed by the legislature against our wishes, and we have a local option sales tax to pay for a stadium. Right. And so we've got to add 44 more folks onto that list.
Well, Representative Earhart, and you talk about horses, that's why we put a bolt on that door, not just a regular lock.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pressure along that door.
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking, as Dan Doney would say, I want one. Why can't I have one? Now you shut the door in 14 other cities. What kind of fairness is that? In 44? For heaven's sakes. What kind of fairness is that?
Mr. Chair, is this a prelude?
Can we phase out then, Mr. Chairman, those that have it? Wouldn't that be fair? Can we phase out everybody that has one just to equalize this thing?
Representative Earhart, that certainly would be an option.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Winchester?
I know you want to get back to it, but just as a prelude to the omnibus tax bill debate and the tax conference committee debate, another way to be fair in shutting all those down, which I'd love to, would be to just let everyone have them. And that's what people need to think about. That is where we're heading. That's where we've been heading. We have now added the metro. The transportation bill is another debate, and everyone on the tax committee, both property tax and the full committee, needs to make a decision about the policies. And they need to set aside the cities that have it and don't, and why they got it and didn't, and why some are grandfathered, and why some aren't, and why some are for floods, and why some are for libraries, and who knows what all. It is the tax committee's responsibility to look at the policy, and the policy is, you just can't defend it when you look at the numbers. It is absolutely exacerbating disparities between wealthy and poor communities. It's a political hodgepodge, and I am completely open to the alternative, which, as opposed to slamming the door shut, is to letting everybody have it. And people just need to know what that means. It means, as Representative Krenke offered in his omnibus tax bill, that we're going to have an LGA offset. I mean, that's where we're going. If we're going to let everybody have them, we're actually going to deduct it right off the LGA. It's just a matter of time. And people who are advocates of LGA just need to see that we're going to start counting that as a need and a revenue source, and that's where we're going to go. We're going to take it away from LGA because everyone's going to have a local option sales. And we just need to debate it.
Representative Mulder, do you want to take the hinges off the door and let everybody in?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was going to comment, first of all, that Representative Winchester is being gracious and not going for a local option sales tax, because there would be no property tax in Bloomington if they had that. But I did want to point out, I think that she mentioned all the cities in Hennepin. I think I thought the transportation bill had it for every city in a local option sales tax imposed on them, basically, for everybody in the metro, again by the state. I do think there is, contrary to Representative Lencheski, I think there's a reason to have them without deduction for local government aid, and I think the intention was good in the first place, and the reason made sense to have regional centers. I think most of them have been basically for regional centers. The only that come to mind is two that around the loop that seem to be not regional centers, but that's an excellent legislator that got those in. But I think there is a basic reason for the regional basis of them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to have the local office sales tax in Missouri, and then I'd certainly be happy to offset it against my LGA. Mr. Chairman,
Representative Earhart,
isn't there, how are we going to reconcile this with the transportation bill? Is this an exception? Is the transportation bill an exception in this case? No.
Representative Earhart, this could be, as mentioned, it could be a conflict with that.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that cost me that budget.
Yep, that's, we'll stand on its own here in this committee, Representative Earhart.
Okay.
All right. Any other Representative Lanning?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Earhart, does that mean you're going to vote against this bill?
Well, you might be right.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Earhart brings up some good points, and I understand where Representative Lencheski and you are coming from, and I support your position that you have when it comes to local option sales tax. And I like the fact that you're bolting the door when it comes to this issue, but what I'm concerned about is that we're bolting it, but we're going to let a few slip in before we close the door. And the one in particular that comes to mind is the Bemidji one. I have gotten a boatload of emails from people from Bemidji that are very upset about this. This vote that they had, it passed by a very narrow margin, and I just don't feel that we are, you know, we're kind of giving a mixed message. It's like telling your kid, you know, you know you can't do this, but we'll let you do it this one time. And I don't feel that that's maybe the right approach, and we're not setting ourselves up for success when it comes to keeping this door bolted down the road.
Representative Anderson, you bring a very good point. I mean, and like Representative Earhart, we've let some in already, and of course the four that we're doing this year, three of them had prior votes. Now, right or wrong, the assumption was if they took a prior vote and approved, they could come back here and probably get that approved. And then the fourth one deals with a flood situation. So, and we tried to narrow it down to just, you know, a criteria that was very narrow in scope, and you know, it's probably wouldn't be fair to say, well, all these are kind of in the works right now, but you know, you got to set a, you know, lock the door at some time, I guess, and we've let, 14 in through the door already, and so, Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Anderson, I want to clarify part of my thinking on that, and for the people who might care about this issue, I have felt that the language that sort of lays out this process, that if you go take a vote and then you come here, has implied to cities wrongly. I think there are a lot of cities who believe that if they take a vote, that means they get an approval when they get here. Now, we all know that's not necessarily true, but it is becoming lore out there in Minnesota that if you went and you took a vote, then the legislature, it's a slam dunk, and it never was intended to be a slam dunk. So I've been an advocate for removing any language that implies that there is a way to make these happen. I want them to stop, but I felt that those legislators who their mayors and councils felt that language implied that if they took a vote, they'd get it. Those who already took a vote, close or not, I mean, I understand the Bemidji vote was really close, and I understand the North Mankato vote was really overwhelmingly in favor. But rather than trying to figure out what the people in Bemidji and North Mankato were doing, I mean, they did have an election, and they passed. So to me, it made sense to say, if you already took a vote and you already passed it, you're in before the door slams shut. My preference would to be not do either one of those, but it's trying to find that policy decision, and for those folks who got the vote done and got in, I guess they're in, and for those who haven't taken a vote, we don't want to encourage people to start thinking that putting it on the ballot means the legislature will give it to you. So that was the thought there.
All right. Thank you very much. Anyone else with general comments? If not, I am going to, we're going to approve minutes here. We have the March 26 minutes. Would anyone care to approve those minutes? Representative Dietrich moves to approve the March 26, 07 minutes. Any discussion? If not, we'll vote on those minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. With that, I will offer the A5 amendment. This is really an author's amendment. It covers about four main areas in the bill, cleans up a few things, changes a couple things after we had things referring to others. The first part
Initially, the bill had a change in the county program aid. On the tax-based equalization side, there's a number of counties that basically are falling off completely, and some of those were cities that are receiving the transition aid, so I was looking at a way to try to protect some of the smallest, most sparsely populated counties by indexing one of the factors there. That didn't work. And even though it was in the bill, the runs that you received on the counties were the runs that reflect what this author's amendments will do. It did not have the proposed changes. So this just brings it back on tax-based equalization part of it on the county program aid, brings it back to the way it was, but it does make permanent the final one-third of the transition aid. So some of these counties like Traverse and Wilkin that basically are going to fall off the edge, they will be assured of this last transition aid. Back in 2003, I believe, was it 2003 that we changed the county program aid formula? There was a transition aid put in for 3 years for counties that really saw huge hits. And that aid, this was the last year of that aid, and this just keeps that final year of the payment in, which I think totals roughly $470,000 or so, about $470,000. So the first part of the amendment reflects that. The second page of the amendment deals with what Representative Loeffler mentioned and was brought up by the counties. It matches the inflation on the county program aid to that of the cities. So where the cities are one and one until they come up with some plan as the groups get together, and then it would go to the implicit price deflator, 2.5 to 5. The county will match the city. So that once the city goes to 2.5 to 5, the counties would do so also. So they're linked to one another. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. Am I Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, the second part of that is that if the cities come to no agreement, the county's inflation factor will go to the IPD with the 2.5 to 5% cap, beginning with aids payable in 2011.
Oh, yeah, very good. I forgot. Thank you very much, Ms. Dalton. So if the cities cannot come to the agreement, the counties won't suffer for that. They get that. Next part dealt with just a word change on that 60-day rule, so there's no substantive change there, just a word change. The last half of page 2 deals with the senior deferral program. Initially, we were going to link, right now, the income limit to get into the senior deferral program is $60,000. We were going to link that with the current, at the time, circuit breaker program, which would have brought it up into the $90,000 range. Now that we no longer have the circuit breaker program per se, and the homestead credit state refund goes up to $150,000, we thought that was a bit much. So this now puts in a $75,000 income limit on the senior deferral program, raises it from $60,000 to $75,000. And page 84, the last line, no more than $10 million. Help me out. I'm throwing a blank on that one, Ms. Stoll.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is, there's currently some blanks in the Crookston local sales tax, and that just fills in the blanks.
Ms. Dalton, anything else or Ms. Baker that I missed on that? So that is the author's amendment?
Yes. I do want to make a comment with respect to the senior deferral. The change in the threshold for income, you will not find a change in the fiscal impact. And because what happened is that we had several different parameters moving there, and I went back to the original estimates to see where income was, where the percentage that is available for that particular program, and the estimates were right in sync with each other. So even though the parameters changed, the revenue estimate was still saying about 25% or 32% more claimants would participate in this program. So you won't see any change in the revenue estimate on the spreadsheet.
Thank you very much. Any debate on that A5 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Other amendments? Representative Mulvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move the A6 amendment. This is on the Ford. Do you want me to explain it? Or?
Please do.
Mr. Chairman, this is just on the 4D properties. The bill, as was introduced, said the 20%, if 20% of the units are qualify, then they could get 4D classification. I think it was just a mistake in drafting that 25 was put in. We had discussed 20, and that was always the consideration.
All right. It's open to discussion from members. Any debate? Right now, it's 25% is currently in the bill, and the amendment would move it to down to 20%. If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. Other amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lanning.
Yes, I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
Representative Lanning moves the A7 amendment. Representative Lanning, would you explain your amendment?
This is the amendment that addresses the issue we heard from a number of testifiers over time about those communities that move up 10,000 after the census, and with rapidly growing communities, that is happening more and more frequently, and this would allow the adjustment to be made right away rather than having a community have to wait for 10 years in order to get their classification as a regional center.
Representative Lanning, is your cold on the upswing or the downswing? It sounds
well,
worse
I hope,
than it did yesterday.
I hope it's on the way out, but I'm operating on not much sleep.
They say if you do nothing, the cold will be better in 7 days. If you take medicine, it's a week.
Yeah. That's very true.
Ms. Dalton, I know there's going to be a shift of some dollars here, but I don't recollect for sure how much that is. Could you tell us how much these cities would receive and what cities would be receiving this money?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there would be about seven cities. Alexandria is one, Sartell, I don't remember the rest of them.
Okay.
That would get more money. That would account for about $2.4 million. And then there would be about another $1.6 million that would be shifted to cities who are currently getting it but are not at the cap, the maximum that they can get. So their population increase would shift some money to them.
Okay.
So it would be about $4 million of shifting.
Okay. So you would be looking at about a $4 million shift from other cities, and I guess without seeing the run, I would oppose this amendment, at least at this time, without seeing that. But comments from members? Representative Lanning, I think it certainly addresses initially what was set up there. I don't know if that was initially put in for a compromise or for regional centers, but I think you do have a number of cities that are moving into that. On this amendment, those cities that are over 10,000 that would happen to dip below would drop off of that formula, or would there be a hold harmless or that? So a city around 10,000, if it drops down, would then not receive the same.
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. So, members, I guess without seeing runs further, knowing that $4 million is going to come from some other cities to augment those, I would oppose the amendment. Any other discussion? If not, I will call for a vote on this. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Other amendments? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the A2 amendment.
Representative Lanning, do you, or do we have copies of that?
No.
Well, you should. It was produced in House Research yesterday afternoon.
Hold on just a second, Representative Lanning. Could we have a page, please?
I do have some extra copies here.
Yeah, maybe we could pass that out so we could start talking about it. Representative Lanning, just hold for about 30 seconds while we get some of these passed out, and then... Representative Lanning, would you
want
to address your amendment? And you move the A2 amendments.
I move the A2 amendment. What this amendment does is to extend the limited market value provision for another 2 years. In 2005, I was the author of the bill that passed in the tax bill that that extended limited market value for 2 more years. And since that time, we've continue to see in a number of places in the state where value increases are not just 10-15%, 25-30% going from one tax year to the next. And, you know, the folks who are experiencing this are the ones that are complaining the most oddly, I think, about property taxes. They don't understand why their values are increasing to that extent. Obviously, the demand for that property is contributing to that. and this these value increases are obviously just on paper. And unless you actually sell your house, you're not benefiting from that. And all this does is provide some protection, saying that if your increase is greater than 15%, that you would qualify for limited market value. And we're not changing the percentage, the 15 and 25% in the first year, and 15 and 33% in the second year. That's the same as we have in law right now.
Any discussion on the E2 amendment?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Earhart.
Is there a 1 year or 2 year left on the limited market value now? I thought there was only 1 year.
I think there's only, this would be the last, Ms. Baker or Mr. Hines?
There's 2 years left.
Which would be 08 and 09?
Yes, I'm sorry. It is going to expire in taxes payable in 11. It'll be gone. Right? I'm sorry, in 10. Taxes payable in 10. It'll be gone. So we have taxes payable in 08 and 09 left. And it ramps up, so it's 15% of the difference for 33%, or 15% increase or 33% of the difference for 08. And then 15% increase or 50% of the difference for 09, and then when it gets to 10, it'll be gone.
And Chair, yeah. Mr. Chairman,
yes. This, Representative Earhart.
This would now take it out 2 years beyond, right, correct?
Correct.
Freezing it at the present phase and then go out 2 more years?
Correct. That would be the intent. Yep. Any other comments? Representative Paymar.
I would just like to add my support to the amendment. Legislative districts like mine, where 15 years ago you could buy a decent, nice house for cost you $110,000, $120,000. the market value is increased to these houses are $300,000-$400,000, and the taxes that senior citizens and people have lived in those houses all their lives are now at the point where they can't afford to stay there. And it's not necessarily because the houses are that superb, and it's a hot neighborhood, and so it's this was one way to sort of put a cushion on it. And I certainly hope that your new homestead credit will mitigate against some of the problems that people are facing, but I also think that preserving LMV and for an additional 2 years would be a good thing for many of our districts throughout the state.
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, do we know how much property is already in the market value now?
Representative Earhart, we do. I don't know if we have the numbers right before us, but we've had that before when staff has made presentation. Mr. Hines, would you care to give a little summary?
Mr. Chairman, for taxes payable in 2007, $33 billion is under LMV.
$33
billion?
So that means, Mr. Chairman, somebody else is paying the break on that.
No.
It's
million.
Representative Lincheski, you have a question or a comment?
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Hines can think about that a little bit. I think it's between those numbers, because I think the amount of tax off the tax rolls in Hennepin alone is something like 8. So just maybe rethinking what's off the tax rolls due to LMB. You think, moving on, why you think about that? I would strongly urge people to vote against this amendment. LMB sounds nice, but what I think people need to understand about limited market value is it does not have cities or counties spend any less money than they are now. It's not attached to the levy. If a city wants to levy a certain amount, they're going to anyhow. It's just taking different parts of market value and shifting that tax burden onto someone else. It's just a shift. It is taking tax value off the tax rolls, and it's shifting those burdens among properties. We are now at the point in the most recent LMV report that more homeowners in Minnesota are being hurt by the program than helped. So on net, if we let it expire, more homeowners will benefit by going away than people who are receiving a benefit. The way to think about it is one neighbor making the next door neighbor pay their taxes, because we're capturing their value and saying it doesn't count. So I would encourage us to keep moving along. We're actually through the worst part of the LMV disappearing, and we just got a little bit left to go. It is not in this division report, but I have spoken to the chair about this, and it's still my intention to try to find a way to enhance the targeting program, which affords tax help for those who are in the situation of rapidly rising property taxes relative to their income. And the limited market value mechanism is one that, in my mind, fills the good tax policy sense, where we don't want to have millions of dollars of market value off the tax rolls. If that meant somehow these local units of government then would spend less, maybe, but that's not what happens. If you're, in my city's case, for example, if you levy $40 million a year, which is what my city's levy was last year, I think, LMD there or not, my city's not going to levy any less. It's still going to get the same amount of money. It's just going to shift around who's going to pay. So people, I think, wrongly think limited market value somehow makes people pay less taxes. It actually doesn't. It just makes different people pay other people's taxes. So I urge you to vote no.
Come back here, and then I'll come back to you. Representative Roffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just clarified with staff, and this does apply to non-homestead residential. And you'll see from the handout that Keith Carlson shared with us again, that over the last 5 years, the non-homestead residential, the 1 to 3 units, which is a third of the properties in my district, paid 96% increase over the last 5 years. They had the largest increase in their tax burden of any type of property. And the only thing, this would actually benefit them. It's the only property that had over a 30% increase that isn't benefited in this particular bill. And on that basis, I'm going to have to support it. I agree with you totally, Representative Lencheski, that this is a crazy thing and we probably should never have gotten into it. But as for that particular type of property, we haven't yet found a way to deal with it. And I just think we need to deal with them in some way.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lencheski, you've only talked about half of this. Yes, in theory, you've got a shifting going on here, but when people's property is increasing at the rate it is, that increases the tax base for the whole jurisdiction. And so all other property is benefiting from the fact that these values are increasing. And whether or not their taxes will actually increase depends upon what is being levied, obviously. But with the rapidly increasing values, all property benefits from that in that jurisdiction. And so all we're asking here in extending limited market value is sort of putting a limit on how much other property can benefit from the fact that my property and others who are experiencing tremendous increase in values are adding to the tax base value of that jurisdiction. And so let's be fair about this. All other property is benefiting from the fact that certain property values have been skyrocketing.
Representative Mallory.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I know Representative Lencheski knows, didn't bring out, there are one of the values of this is a lessening of the huge effect that was done a few years ago on shifting property taxes from commercial onto homeowners. This protects a little bit against that. We haven't really dealt with that huge shift onto homeowners that occurred a few years ago. And there are some positives and negatives about this, but during the 90s, the suburbs, at least in Hennepin County, and I believe in Ramsey and its surrounding areas, the suburbs benefited hugely by the full limited market value. Now when the inner city started gaining from limited market value at a greater extent, then the legislature started cutting back on the effect of it. So in essence, your inner cities that were benefiting now have receive far less benefit than the suburbs did when it was applying to them. Unfortunately, right now, my area is not benefiting, but quite a bit of the inner cities are. I'm not sure that the other groups that are the wealthiest part of Hennepin County is also benefiting it the most right now. So there's different considerations there, but I think those all have to be considered when you're working on this.
You know, the latest trends of showing that actually the market value increases on homeowners is really slowing down. In fact, in this area, St. Paul, and that I thought I saw were over 50% are actually being reduced. On the last study I saw, it was actually the agricultural land and seasonal rec that was really having the problems with the increasing values. And I think in the ag area, hopefully with some of this rural vacant land and new classification and some of the other things we've put into the ag benefits, I think that would help the ag land. We talked about limited market value as we put this bill together, and we really thought the homestead credit state refund would take care of most of that, because when you're basing this now on your income, as your taxes go up, whether it's because of your market value going up or tax rates in the local jurisdiction going up, it stays to your income. And so I think when we talk about especially seniors and fixed incomes who are in homes that see rising market values, this new refund is going to be greatly beneficial to them and will really shield them from this increase in market value. So I almost thought this refund made the limited market value a moot point, Now, certainly on seasonal rec and added in ag land, it becomes a little bit more. But also, Representative Wofler, just so there's no misunderstanding, every classification of property benefits under this bill. Some more than others. Yeah, I mean, so everyone, because of the ag, or because of the education levies and LGA and so forth, certainly homeowners and homestead ag benefit the most where there's actual reductions there. But I guess I'm going to vote no on this just because I think the last study I saw also, I think there still are more people that are paying more because of limited market value than are benefiting. And I think with the homestead credit state refund, you're going to take care of this problem. Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What the effect is going to be of the deferral program for seasonal rec, I think, is yet to be determined. It's an interesting idea. It's probably worth a try to see if it'll have any effect. But it doesn't actually lower any taxes. It just defers it. And, I just would tend to think that for those who want to pass on their seasonal rec property in the family, they're probably going to decide, I'm just going to pay the taxes and not give the tax bill to my children who take over the property later. And aside from your deferral program, it's hard to point to property tax relief in this bill for seasonal rec. And seasonal rec, as you know from your district, from mine, I get more complaints about property value issues from my constituents who also own seasonal recreational property than I do from others. And, it's definitely an important issue to a lot of our citizens in Minnesota. And, Mr. Chairman, I would request a roll call.
All right. There has been. Do I see 15 hands? No, not. There will be a roll call. Any further comments? If not, we will take the roll call on limited market value on the A2 amendment.
Chair Markforth?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Brown? Representative Demmer?
Yes.
Representative Dietrich?
No.
Representative Earhart?
Yes.
Representative Lanning?
Yes.
Representative Lincheski?
No.
Representative Loeffler?
Okay.
Representative Mullery?
No.
Representative Paymar?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Loeffler?
No.
The 8-2 amendment carries 6-5, is adopted 6-5. Are there any other amendments? Representative Lanning.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A3 amendment.
Representative Lanning, you'll have to hold on. We'll need copies of this one also. Do you have some extra? Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Lanning.
This responds to, this is at the request of those city and county organizations who feel that this provision will significantly add to their costs. You heard the figure today estimated maybe $1 million of additional cost to be able to send this notice out. And so what this amendment would do is to take out that supplemental notice proposed levy increase. It's that, take that out of the for the bill.
Thank you. Any comments to the A3 amendment? First of all, the percentage here, the threshold, is 1%. The amendment here is a supplemental notice that goes out to property owners that if a city or county would be over a certain threshold, they would have to send out a first-class letter to their residents indicating the fact that they're going over this threshold and the reasons why. It's not a levy limit. It's not a reverse referendum. It's not a turbocharged survey. But it does add accountability. And one of the things that was brought up by Mr. Horner, if you remember in the testimony, is that as we went to the homestead credit state refund, you do have, as property taxes go up, you would have more state dollars coming into the system to buy down these taxes as people hold their property taxes to about 2% of their income. There is a copay, and that's one of the reasons why this division didn't go along with the 5% cap, for example, which has been brought up earlier, because once you do the 5% cap, then a local unit of government can say, you know, it doesn't really matter. We can continue to raise our taxes because it's not going to hit seniors because the state's going to come in and pay everything over a certain threshold. So you need to have that link of accountability. And so as we kind of went through this, we were thinking, you know, how can we add some accountability to this without having a levy limit, a reverse referendum, or some other type of thing? And so this is what was put in place. We do feel it's reasonable. We do feel it adds some accountability into the system. And what the threshold is 1% plus the percent of your population increase plus the percent of your market value of new construction plus the implicit price deflator. So it actually, you know, it's not a real low threshold. I mean, it's up there. It gives a good margin of error, so to speak. And I guess I would vote against this. There's been, I know Mr. Carlson from the counties mentioned the cost. However, if you don't go over the threshold, there is no cost. Stay under the threshold, and there is no cost. So, you know, I suppose you could frame it in whatever terms, but we do think it adds some accountability into this new system that we're doing, and the fact that there's a $500 million of new property tax relief going into the system, we think this is a fair and moderate approach to some accountability. So open for comments. Oh, Representative Lincheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, you said most of what I would have said, except to say this is an attempt to sort of balance the folks who've supported levy limits and Tabor and turbocharged postcards and all these kind of hard attempts to stop cities from spending, and those who would not want any accountability of spending at all. And I think this provision says, as you stated, Mr. Chair, that we are infusing major property tax relief, but we don't want local units of governments to go off and say this is licensed to spend through the roof. Now, the governor is proposing levy limits, and that would be an approach. I personally have not been a supporter of levy limits. I don't think actually Representative Lanning is either. And I think Representative Lanning and I share our a trusting nature that city council members and mayors and county commissioners are in general pretty frugal and pretty responsible and pretty respectful. And so therefore, you know, I personally have never wanted to be real heavy-handed and have levy limits. Not a supporter. Don't support these Tabor or these artificial mechanisms to stop local units of government from spending. On the other hand, to have no sort of accountability measure in here at all, and again, it builds in lots of ability to grow here, population growth, some inflation. You really have to get up over a pretty high set threshold to have this come into play, and I think members should realize that, you know, We anticipate, I don't think the governor's not going to be for levy limits as we go through the conference committee process. And I think members need to weigh the kind of heavy-handed of some and the do-nothing of others. And I think this is a good media, moderate ground between the two perspectives on what kind of accountability we should put on local units of government for spending increases. And remembering, we do give them lots of state aid.
Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for you then. I vaguely remember this bill when it came up to this committee, but I'm just trying to see how it would work for my county and my city. Unfortunately, this past year, so this is for any city over 2,500.
Correct.
Obviously, St. Paul and Ramsey County would apply here. So, unfortunately, with all of the cuts to LGA and county aid over the past few years, the city of St. Paul found itself in the position where it increased its levy by over 8%, and Ramsey County increased its levy significantly. So, without having to go through the formula in your head there, would that mean that both the city and my county would have to send letters out to every taxpayer in the city as well as in the county? And this is in addition to the truth and taxation meetings that would already be taking place in the county.
Representative Paymar, that is correct. And both the city and the county would have to send that letter out. And it says the notice must contain a description of why the jurisdiction needs to raise property taxes above the threshold amount. So they could certainly say, we need to raise this because we were cut X amount in local government aid, or the federal government has cut. I mean, it would give them a chance to explain that also. I mean, we don't prescribe exactly what they say in their letter. It would be this notice stating that they're going above the threshold and the reason why. But yes, both the county and the city would have to send that out.
Mr. Chair, so then the purpose for this again is to,
Representative Paymar, it's to increase the accountability. I mean, the fact that, you know, there's some that would argue for levy limits or reverse referendums or other type of very onerous type of limits on what you can spend. This does not limit at all what a city can levy. There's no, you know, but it does say if you're going over this amount, which we think is fairly generous, that you have to send this letter out stating why.
So, Mr. Chair, could the letter say something like, due to the fact that the state of Minnesota, the governor and the state legislature has not adequately funded local government aid to your city, we are now forced to increase taxes?
Representative Paymar, they could put your phone number in there also. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're all for accountability. But I would hope that all of us also are sensitive to unfunded mandates, and that's really what this is. And any of us who have been involved in local government know that trying to explain in a simple letter all the factors that go into what may cause a levy to increase or not is not a simple matter. And it's very easy for people still doing this to be given the wrong impression, to be given incomplete information. It's very difficult to fully explain to people all of what goes into their tax bill and what the whys and wherefores of it are. And so, while I'm for accountability, I'm cautious about unfunded mandates, and I also am sensitive to concern here about being able to provide complete and full information.
Representative Demmer.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of changed my thinking a bit when you mentioned the phone number part. Although Representative Paymar's phone number in my district might be rather interesting. It's an interesting thought, Mr. Chair. As I've been thinking this through, Mr. Chair, it occurred to me we already have, we already have the proposed tax statement that goes out. And now if I get a letter, first-class letter from my community and from my county, I have to agree with Representative Lanning in terms of the complexity in confusing taxpayers. You know, in terms of I'm getting more letters, what's going on. And the spirit of excuse me, transparency and maybe raising people's attention, that would probably do that. But I have to come back on the side again of the cost of doing this. You know, we got postage, obviously. Staff time is going to be significant. And, you know, in a time when we're being accused of putting more unfunded mandates of whether it's cities and counties and saying we have to do things for questionable, when we already have truth and taxation hearings, we already have the notices going out ahead of time of their proposed increase, and then, and of course, the hearing afterwards. You know, I guess, quite frankly, if we're after accountability, and if we really want local communities to be accountable for their property tax increases, I think, you know, if we're going to be really serious about it, we'd be careful about property tax relief. And as Representative Lucheski talked earlier about shifting, you know, when we're giving relief to local property taxpayers and paying for it with some other type of tax, are we really sending a message we want them to be accountable and not overtax, and yet we're helping cover what they're levying, which then opens the door maybe for them doing more? Seems to me we get some mixed messages in doing this. That's a broader issue than just saying, you know, we're going to force you to send out another letter and prepare the letters and have Representative Paymar's phone number statewide. So I guess as I think this through, Mr. Chair, I understand the principle behind it, and I'm not opposed to the idea. I just don't know if another letter is a good idea.
Thank you. Anyone else? Comments? All right. I'm going to call
Mr. Chairman, I ask for a roll call.
Representative Lanning calls for a roll call on the A3 amendment. We will take the roll.
Chair Marquardt?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Demmer?
Yes.
Representative Dietrich?
No.
Representative Earhart?
Yes.
Representative Lanning?
Yes.
Representative Lincheski?
No.
Representative Loeffler?
No.
Representative Mullery?
No.
Representative Paymar?
No.
Representative Earhart?
No.
By a vote of 3-8, the amendment is not adopted. Any further amendments? If not, we do have this room until 12:30, but my intention is to be out of here by noon. But there were a few people that wanted to testify generally. And so we've got Lawrence Johnston, Lynn Reed, and Joe Sulem, who would like to. And please, 2 minutes or less, please. Thank you.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Larry Johnston with Southern Minnesota Municipal Power Agency. We serve 18 municipal utilities around the state of Minnesota. With electrical service, we are in fact co-owners with Xcel Energy and Sherco 3, and we own approximately 267 miles of transmission around the state of Minnesota. Minnesota started a process in terms of personal property tax reform decades ago, and then a number of years ago they finally got to the electric utilities. And they started looking at how our business is influenced by the cost associated with personal property tax. And the rulemaking process that proceeded over the past number of years continued that reform process and attempted to really make sure that the personal property tax of electric utilities was fairly and properly valued. It seems to me that the provisions in terms of the class rate changes in the proposed legislation are actually kind of going in the wrong direction at the wrong time. One of the committee members mentioned earlier that there's a number of other activities that are going on, and I guess at the moment my best way of describing those to you is that if you're familiar with the efforts of the CapEx 2020 efforts to build transmission in the state, we're talking over the next 20 years of billions of dollars in new transmission being built in the state of Minnesota. The need for additional generation to be built. We've just passed one of the most aggressive renewable energy standards in the country that's going to require additional generation to be built, renewable generation to be built. And we passed some very aggressive conservation, or in the process of passing some very aggressive conservation programs. All of these things have impacts on the ratepayer. You've heard other people speak to that. In our case, being municipal power, our ratepayers taxpayers and our owners are one and the same. There is absolutely nowhere else for it to go than the ratepayers, and I guess that we would like to urge you to remove that portion of the bill as this goes forward. So with that, that concludes my testimony.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Reed.
Excuse me. I'll be brief, Mr. Chair. My name is Lynn Reed. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Taxpayers Association. Unfortunately, I stepped out when Jack Horner shared. He may be a little repeat, but you can never get too much good tax policy, right? I want to first commend the division for sensitivity to the efficiency of giving relief based on ability to pay the check to the taxpayer in their particular circumstance. I would also caution about one of the Latimer Commission's concerns of the old homestead credit when the homeowner's bill was paid more than half by the state. And it does create incentives, of course. As my former boss described it, Dan Salamone, back in the 90s, it's like property tax relief. It's sort of like the air conditioner trying to fight the furnace. I turned the temperature up in the furnace with a very generous, more than 50% subsidy, and you're trying to fight it with the air conditioner to cool that down a bit. So that's a caution that whenever you pay more than half of a homeowner's property tax bill, you've created some incentives that are not good. And just on the, this is an aside on the utility thing, whatever you do, maybe you should let utilities list the property tax bill as a cost on the utility bill. I think that's been nixed before, but in terms of disclosure, it's helpful for ratepayers to see what costs are buried in their electric bill. That's all.
Thank you very much. Mr. Stoll.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Sullivan. I'm with the law firm of Flaherty & Hood, and I'm here representing the Coalition of Utility Cities. I just wanted to say that the Coalition of Utility Cities supports increasing the classification rates in the bill. In particular, I wanted to point out four things quickly. In 2001, the legislature reformed the property tax system, and those reforms have delivered more than $48 million in property tax have shifted more than $48 million in property taxes onto residential and commercial industrial. The new rules that will take effect later this year will shift another $34 million onto residential and commercial industrial taxpayers, and that's away from utilities. What we're asking, or what the legislation does, is it basically just restrikes the same balance that was set in 2001. So the upshot of that is that there would be no increase in the taxes that are paid by utilities, because they're going to be paying the same in taxes that they paid last year. It's just offsetting for the decreased valuations. The third thing is that this is a very targeted class rate increase. 81% of the taxable electric generating utility property is housed in the seven cities that are represented in the Coalition of Utility Cities, so there's not going to be any windfall to any other communities. And finally, I just wanted to say that utility personal property is taxed, but it's taxed with good reason. Then that's because utilities are not like other businesses. They pollute on a grand scale. They're rate regulated, so they have guaranteed rates of return. They also, when these power plants were sited in our host cities, they came with a promise, and that promise was you would get property tax dollars. So with that, I conclude. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. So, is there anyone here from the city of Ely? We had heard there was someone maybe from the city of Ely. If not, the Municipal Legislative Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Schreiber with Mesley Craver, representing the Municipal Legislative Commission. I think we testified earlier we are the 13 suburban communities in the metropolitan area who do not receive local government aid. and we quickly note that your new increases in local government aid with the computer runs, we continue not to receive any local government aid, and we want to assure you that that's just fine. As it relates to what I think is the hallmark of this bill is the shift in moving from a fixed market value homestead credit arrangement to one that's based upon income. And we talked about that earlier at the beginning of the session in terms of that concept. That's what our communities believe, that rather than sending these dollars directly out to the communities, that it should be more directed towards the taxpayers that are in most need. And it appears that you're doing that. I would join Mr. Reed with the Taxpayers Association in that word of caution based upon previous history, and that it is that the homestead credit originally started out as a noble effort to reduce property taxes, and over time the percentage, and Karen can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it started out at like 35% of that bill up to a maximum dollar amount of like $325 would be paid by the state, and ultimately, if I recall correctly, it ended up at 58% and $725. And we heard anecdotal evidence of city councils actually saying, well, it's okay if we raise the levy because most of our homes are of lower value and the state of Minnesota will be picking up 58% of that. What we're arguing then is that you need to look very carefully at the percentages that you're using. What is the threshold amount? What is the participation on part of the state as compared to the property taxpayer? So that we don't create that incentive to spend again because somebody else is going to be paying rather than the individual taxpayer. So that's the end of my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else that care to speak for or against the division report, that items that haven't been covered yet? If not, any comments from members before we vote? Representative
Erickson. Mr. Chairman, that same idea that former Representative Schreiber was talking about has been going on for years in the Cincinnati Rec areas where the locals run ads, don't worry about the increase in taxes and levies because the Cincinnati Rec people are going to pay for it and they can't vote for it. And I'll share those ads anytime you'd like. But besides that, I'm sorry I missed your fiscal analysis yesterday, but I suspect that there's got to be some mechanism to pay for this, and otherwise, I think it has some lovely points in the bill, but I can't vote for this thing. Since my homeowners are also earners of income, and some of them rather high, and it's going to be handing one thing in one hand and out the door into another hand here, and I think they're apt to be hit harder than on the income tax aspect of what's forthcoming here. So that would be my feeling. Hello, Mr. Chairman, I would get $2,500 on the property tax relief program. I'm going to vote against myself.
Thank you. Anyone else? Representative Loeffler. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to request a roll call.
Okay, there will be.
And I won't mention what I get on this.
Any other comments? Representative Lanny.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I indicated the other day, I congratulate you on putting together a bill that I think fairly reflects a lot of the issues we've discussed. And I also commend you for being an excellent chairman and conducting our meetings. And it's been fun to be a part of this group. Mr. Chairman, as I've discussed with you before, I'm still uncomfortable with the property tax refund and people having to fill out a form and ask for it or apply for it. It seems to me it's not the best public policy, tax policy, to in effect have people beg for something that they're entitled to under the law. And so, as you and I have discussed, I'm going to continue to work on seeing if we can't find a way to build this into our income tax form so that it, it's something that people would be able to readily get as they file their taxes. And we'll keep you posted. Hopefully we'll have something that we can bring to the tax committee along those lines. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you, Representative Lanning. That is, as we've talked before, that is, it would be the best if we could potentially put that right on the property tax form or some sort of form where you wouldn't, it would be automatically calculated. And when talking some with revenue, I think they are going to be looking to see if there's something they can do in that respect and getting with counties and so forth. And you would have to, like, for example, was pay 2008, you would take pay, or 2006 income taxes, so you'd have that year. And when values are assessed for, like, pay 08, they were assessed back in January of 07, so the time lag's about the same, but market value and your income. And so let's work together on that. I appreciate that, Representative Lanning.
Thank you. I appreciate your openness to that as well. I'm willing to vote to have this bill go to tax committee, but I want all of you to know and understand, as you suspect from comments I made last week, that how this bill gets funded is not acceptable in our view. And I would hope Carolyn Chesky and you, Mr. Chairman, would be thinking about other ways in which we can fund this. Because what you proposed as to how we fund this bill just is not going to fly in our view. And, you know, I hope we do a lot of these things, but not in the way it's been proposed. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo some of the comments made by Representative Lanning. You've run a tight ship here and appreciate what the work that you've done. As far as this legislation goes, I will be supporting the proposal that we have for property tax relief. Like Representative Lanning, though, it is my hope that when it goes to the full tax committee that you look at a different revenue source, because I don't think that doing a tax shift, as Representative Lanczewski said earlier, it's just a shift. I think that we should be avoiding doing that and looking at other sources to be funding this property tax relief that our constituents are looking for. I'd also be interested in addressing the concerns that were expressed here on the utility portion of things as it spread out to all of the ratepayers. And I think Representative Earhart made a good point in that we're basically just spreading it out to all of our communities that won't be benefiting from the tax base that these cities are going to be benefiting from. And a couple of other concerns that I've mentioned here along the way, and I won't belabor since it's near lunchtime and I can hear people's stomachs growling. So, but I just wanted to put forward my comments there, and thank you.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd echo some of the things, but particularly, Mr. Chair, again, I'm new to the Tax Committee. I really enjoyed this experience, both in taxes and in property taxes. I've enjoyed working with you. We've kind of had a common interest, I think, especially in the rural area with the ag land taxes. I felt very strong about that coming in and spent some time working on that, and I think we've had an opportunity to ferret that out, if you will, and make some effort in that area. Probably didn't get everything that I wanted to get in terms of the ag land relief, but as we had in our conversation, I think we did what we probably could do, and I appreciate your efforts and including me and letting me be a part of that. I do have one question, because that's a part of this. And Mr. Chair, I don't know if you or maybe Representative Lanczewski can answer. Will this report be included completely in the tax bill? Is it going to be parts of it in the tax bill? Do we know how that's going to work out?
Representative Demmer, of course, this will all go right now, be referred to the tax committee. Where the education levy reductions go, we're not totally sure at this point. It may stay in taxes. Right now, it's probably in K-12. So we don't know that for sure, but initially, this entire report will be referred to taxes, and everything would stay the same as in taxes, except maybe the K-12 levy portion of it, reduction.
Yeah, and I have seen that in K-12. We've got pieces of it, and it's the pieces are seem to be in both places, so it'll be interesting to see how that works out. But so the rest of it probably would be as a complete report, it sounds like, then, all included.
Yeah, correct, Representative Demmer. This report, and I don't know how we'll deal with the education stuff yet in tax committee, but the rest of it would go into the tax bill portion of it.
Well, again, thank you for your work. I appreciate the approach you've taken and the honest effort you put into trying to put something good together.
Any other comments? Representative Loeffler.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, since this might be the last meeting of the division, I would like to say, as a new member, I've really enjoyed it. And I'm just so impressed with how you have been open to lots of people's ideas and inputs and balanced it. And the incredible depth and wealth of information that every step of the way that we've had. And I have to compliment you and the committee staff, as well as the House research staff, for making this one of the most informed committees I've served on. Thank you.
Yes, and thank the staff and everyone for all of that. So, Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too want to thank both the Republican staff and the DFL staff that's been working with all of us this whole year so far, and of course all the nonpartisan staff, and I continue to be amazed at the ability of all the staff to pull the answers out of thin air as all of us sort of ramble on and get lost in our own thoughts. They're able to put us back on track, and Mr. Chair, I have to say I've been incredibly impressed with your willingness and desire in pursuing Minnesotans' views on taxes. The property tax line, I think, was a great idea. I hope more chairs over time use that same sort of process to bring people literally to the table and give us their ideas. And so I think it's been a great process. To the process going forward, certainly the tax committee members will all take their best shot with the division report. and I anticipate, I'm hoping that Representative Lanning just loses that voice permanently, because he's just going, and I'm hoping it just goes all the way. But I do think
come on.
She found his voice. But I do think one of the pleasures, really, in the time I've been on the tax committee, and sometimes there's been a property tax division and sometimes not, and sometimes there's been a sales and income tax division and sometimes not, but I can say that I have, for me, the debate and the disagreement, whether it's on a limited market value provision, which I should clarify for Representative Anderson, the shift I was talking about is within limited market value from one home to the other. So that was a tax shift I was referencing. But whether it's a limited market value debate or a local option sales tax or anything else, I mean, this is one of the reasons I enjoy being a legislator. And there really are no strong right or wrong answers on these things. It's just doing the best to understand what's fairest for Minnesotans. And I think you and your division members bipartisanly have done that. And can we hold it all together exactly in this form in the tax committee? I don't know. But it is definitely my intent to try to, because I think this is very solid work and there's been a lot of input. And I thank you for your leadership on this.
Thank you very much, Representative Mulry.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I also want to thank you, but especially the staff and fantastic job they do. But I just wanted to comment on Representative Lencheski's comment on how the staff answers questions. I found out from more than one staff this year that they kind of, and they know a lot of us, and they know we ask a lot of questions when we know the answer already. We're trying to make out a point, and they anticipate where we're going in advance. And I think it's just incredible how they know us and the subject. They just do a tremendous job.
Well, Representative Dietrich.
Yes, since we're thanking the staff, I need to weigh in because I think they probably spent more time with me than it is very much appreciated. And having spent most of my time in the education world and education property taxes and that type of stuff, it is incredible how much you can simplify this for people. That is really a gift, and I thank you for that. And then I also want to thank the chair again. I just don't have enough praise within me
to say, to articulate what an accomplishment I think that you have brought forward here. You know, we started out this legislative session with some promises. We listened to actual people, taxpayers, and we delivered on those promises within this division. And anytime you can do that, that just brings real satisfaction. And so you brought us along with that in that process, and I thank you for that opportunity. Chairman Marquardt.
Thank you very well. Thank you all so much for those very, very generous words. And I will say that I do think we produced a strong report here, and it is because of your hard work and dedication we did that in working with all the members. And I really appreciate the input, and we had great debate here, and I really do think we've produced an excellent product. And so thank you very much for that. It's been a true pleasure. And also the staff. It is just an amazing staff. I know as the tax committee moves on, we'll continue to work with staff. And Paul and Sarah here have just putting things together have been tremendous. And also thank all the testifiers and all the groups, because, well, we don't always give you everything you want. You do make a significant impact here, and your input here is, well, not always agreed with or we go with, it's taken into account, so I do appreciate that very, very much. So there'll be much more debate on all of this, but for division members who are not on the tax committee, but won't see any more here as we go through all this, thank you so much for everything. And I know you have a lot of extra meetings than some of the other as we met, and as Chair Lanchesky was so gracious to give us all this time. So thank you all. And with that, we will take the roll call on the division report. And it is to move the DE1 amendment, or the division report, DE1 amendment, for approval and we refer to the tax committee.
As amended.
As, thank you, as amended. Representative Lang still has his voice. All right, we'll take the vote.
Chair Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Demmer?
Yes.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes.
Representative Earhart?
No.
Representative Lanning?
Yes.
Representative Lanchesky?
Yes.
Representative Loeffler?
Yes.
Representative Mullery?
Yes.
Representative Paymar?
Yes.
The amendment is adopted, 10-1, and it's referred to the taxes. Members, thank you so much, and we are adjourned.